Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio as we say hello to our listeners around the world, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, England, and even the small community of Paragon, Indiana. It's great to have you along on our Thursday night talk, chat, and we've got a fantastic guest for you in just a few moments. Ronnie Saigo, the drummer extraordinaire. He's played with such artists as Patrick Moraz, Ricky Lee Jones, Tony Kaye, a lot of people that have been on the show, the old Rolling Stone, Mick Taylor. He'll be with us in just a few moments. We want to remind everyone that this part of Wild World is brought to you by Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Weekend and Expo. You need to get the video if you're a fan of such programs as Finding Bigfoot or Sasquatch Legend Meets Science. Over 6 hours of video is available. And it's on video on demand, $4.99. Go to Chautauqua Lake. Let me spell you that. Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot.com. It's all there. And they make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Wizard with our guest tonight, Ronnie Saigo. Hey, Ronnie, you're a machine, my God.
Hey,
welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me aboard.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is extraordinary, man.
You know what? It's funny because when I listen to them, I think that we got hired by this record company because they were doing a Genesis tribute record.
Mm-hmm.
And we got hired to do that. It was John Wetton, a few other people. John had it cut on it. We had it cut on it. And we were going, me and Patrick were going through some stuff, and we were going, well, what do we want to do about Genesis? We had to go through a lot of different tracks. And I finally told them, I said, no, we should do this end of, but do it on our mm-hmm. own version of it. And it was different. If you listen to the original, it's a different kind of feel and a different kind of thing. But it took me a while to convince Patrick because he didn't want to do it.
Oh, really?
He didn't want to do it. So I finally convinced him, and it turned out like that. And the other side of that was we really did the whole thing in one take, which is just crazy.
Wow. They don't do
and
that much
just,
anymore.
No, there was no quantizing, no fixing this and that. We just went in there, played it, and of course, when it went to the different sections, we had to cut out and do the different section.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like, oh, you know, we didn't fix or over that. We just, okay, 1, 2, 3, go. And we did it. And it came out like that.
Oh, my God. That was too much fun, wasn't it?
It was a lot of fun. And the whole thing got finished, done and finished. I think Patrick went in and did a couple of overdub solo parts after that. But the whole thing was done in, I think, 5 hours. Everything.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Well, you just explode them. The drum parts in that are just extraordinary. I'm a big fan of drummers.
Oh, well, thank you.
We've had lots of drummers on the show, Chris Franz, Joe Vitale, who else?
Wow.
Willie Wilcox.
Oh, okay.
And,
let me see. The first guy was, what was his name again?
Chris Franz.
Now, Chris, did he play with...
Talking Heads.
Steve Vai, Talking Heads, okay.
Yeah, Talking Heads.
Talking Heads, very famous.
Oh, my
and
God.
And then Joe was with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, right?
Oh, yeah. And a big secret coming out that of course, he played with Barnstorm and Joe Walsh, and they're getting back together to do some kind of a tour.
Wow.
Because all the members...
He wasn't feeling well. He wasn't, you know, feeling that well for a while, but he came out of it. He's doing okay.
Yeah, the whole band's healthy, and they're going to try. Of course, Joe's commitment is with the Eagles, so he has to work around that schedule. But that's very exciting. But we're here to talk about you tonight, man. We're so happy to have you on the show. We're kind of a skeleton crew tonight because I'm running the board, and I said this is going to be too much fun tonight because our short chats on the phone, I thought he's going to be an outstanding guest, and we're going to talk about some of the artists you've played with. Now Patrick, I saw him live when he was with Yes for, it wasn't a long time, I don't believe, what, a couple of years?
But you saw Patrick when he was with Yes?
Yes.
That was pretty incredible. Yeah, that must have been because that Relayer record was they could never compare to that. It was a fusion version of very progressive ideas and melodies and all that, the soloing and all the crazy stuff that went on that record. So
for a drummer, that's got to just be an extraordinary experience.
Yeah. Playing with Patrick?
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
Well, the thing is, you know, that he was playing with Bill Bruford before me, right? It was he did the two albums with Bill Bruford, then he went with Moody Blues for 10 years. But when he came back, he wanted to kind of redo the idea of Mraz and Bruford, and we were going to call it Mraz and Siago. Now, it was completely different than Bruford, even though we did a few of the songs on those records,
mm-hmm.
but on our own version and the way I would play it. And he actually didn't want me to play it like the way Bill would play it.
Well, that's...
I couldn't swing like you anyway, he said.
Well, man, I when I was listening to those drum parts on the piece we just heard, which to tell you the truth, that's the first opportunity I had to listen to it, because I always like to listen to the music fresh if I haven't heard it before. And man, I thought,
well, you know, the beginning of it, because well, in the original version, it's with a bad at, and Phil Collins is just going boom, because he's got like a real fast rock
mm-hmm.
thing. So I took that, I said, I'm going to take that almost in a half a tempo, but make it into an African groove. And so that's what that is.
Oh,
I'm playing an African 6/8, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's why it sounds like that. It's an African beat.
Do you listen to a lot of, a lot of that type of music? I mean, to get ideas and
well, I've been playing all different styles of music, whether it be African, Latin, and Indian, Middle Eastern. I've been doing this for a while, maybe like 10 years, 25 years. It's really studying, getting into the rhythms and how they're supposed to be played and how to apply them on the drum set, because they're usually percussion ideas.
Yeah. What brand of drums do you play?
Well, a lot of different brands. I was with Ty Jones for a while, T-A-Y-E. And then I didn't think they would be capable to be on the road because they were having problems with distributing. So it wasn't like I could go out and do a clinic and everything would be they would show up with all my stuff. It had to be
mm-hmm.
in certain towns. So I didn't want to work like that, especially if I'm going on tour. The backline has to have all that stuff. I'm not going to be dragging drums around all over the world, you know. So I'm actually in the midst of looking for another deal right now. I played drums like Gretsch, Yamahas, and sometimes DWs. I got like 20 different snare drums I use. It depends on what
sure.
kind of session it is, you know, and I have the different sounds on each kit, so. There's not only one kid. They're all different.
Yeah. Who influenced you? Who made you decide that, hey, I want to be a drummer, a percussionist?
Well, you know, my dad is a jazz sax player,
mm-hmm.
so we already had that connection in the family with the music. I toyed around with sax and things like that, but I knew that drums were my thing because when I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
I would be fooling around with the drums with my friends, and I knew I could do some special things that they couldn't do. So I go, I'm gonna pursue this because it just feels good.
Mm-hmm.
It feels right. And it feels like this is what I'm gonna do. So, and that was like age 5, and it didn't stop since.
Oh my! Yeah. was there any musical groups that first caught your ear that?
I mean, of course, you know, growing up, there was Beatles and Hendrix, Stone, you know, all those guys when I was growing up. So
sure.
that's what really Cream, you know, all those guys
mm-hmm.
Coming up. And then, you know, as I was learning jazz with my dad, I got into all the jazz guys. So that's why I had that influence of jazz and rock and Latin influences along with African.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my style.
Yeah. Well, now just out of my own interest, who would you consider the better drummers amongst the ones that you just met, the groups from Cream to the Hendrix to the Beatles?
Oh, yeah. The drums now has gotten light years away from where it was then.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many different guys. I mean, even guys like you probably wouldn't know who he is, but his name is Trillak Gurtu. He was with Sean McLaughlin for a while, Argon,
mm-hmm.
and he's doing a lot of his other stuff now, his own stuff now. But he had the Indian rhythms that he would fuse with, you know, with jazz and rock, and then he had all those tabla percussion rhythms going on. So that to me was like, oh, man. it just doesn't get better than that. And of course, Billy Cobham and those guys, you know, Buddy Rich,
Oh, Buddy Rich. I have a funny story about Buddy Rich. Do you remember the Fillmore East, Bill Graham's club, or theaters? You remember a band 10 years after?
Oh, of course. Alvin Lee?
Alvin Lee. Well, I think the drummer's name was Rick Lee, I think.
His brother. Yeah, I thought it was his brother. Maybe
yeah.
Not. Yeah,
well,
that's Rick Lee.
Yeah, well, he used to do these long drum solos during their concerts. And Bill Graham wasn't a big fan of that. So he booked with 10 years after, their opening act was going to be Buddy Rich.
Oh, man.
You know where I'm going with this story.
Oh, yeah, you bet they heard Buddy, because now I think I'll pass on the drum solo.
Well, what was funny is...
Alvin, you just keep singing guitar. Don't worry about me. I'll be all right.
I guess Bill Graham walks in their dressing room before the night, and he's on his drum pad, you know, warming up. He says, "You ready for your big solo tonight?" And he says, "Yes, I am." And, of course, Buddy Rich comes out. And I can remember Buddy Rich from the old Tonight shows.
Yeah.
And he was just amazing. And I guess after Buddy Rich played, that there was no drum solo.
He's choking up. out of all the drummers, it just you can't compare him with anybody, because they would never, even the best of the best couldn't play like that.
Oh, he was well, like I was talking, he was a machine like you.
growing up, I was a big fan. My dad took me to see him a bunch of times. I went to see him at least 10 times. So, and I knew all the charts. I studied with guys who taught him, you know. So, big fan.
Well, when you see somebody like that, and then you see somebody, I can't remember who the drummer was for Count Basie, but once again, you know,
Louis Belson. Louis Belson.
Yeah. I mean, in those bands, and you know, when you go into the rock era, you know, they always said one of the best drummers for rock bands was Charlie Watts, and he was steady, absolutely.
Yeah.
But as far as doing music like we just heard with you and Patrick Mraz, there's just no comparison whatsoever.
Charlie Watts, Bonham, John Bonham, he was great. Of course, he was an influence too. You know, the way he really swung with the music.
He did. I mean, Led Zeppelin was so explosive because of him. And I had an opportunity to see them live. I must have been their second tour, and he pretty much ruled the roost. I mean, that band was he brought stabilization to Led Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw them. Gosh, I think about the time Kashmir was on that album come out, and that song was so popular.
Yeah.
And Ronnie, they come out at Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, and they were so bad. Robert Plant had laryngitis. Jimmy Page was intoxicated.
Yeah.
And they were, I mean, when you mess up the introduction to Stairway to Heaven on the guitar.
Oh, man.
And the only thing that saved that concert to any degree was the drum solo by John Bonham.
Yeah, you know what? Even when I saw them, too, I think I was, 16, in New York. I think it was in Nassau Coliseum or the Garden. I don't remember one of those places. But, John Paul Jones and Bonham were really the leader of the band, because Plant and Page, they weren't doing it. He couldn't hit the notes. Robert couldn't hit the notes vocally, and then Plant was Page was kind of just like fiddling about. He wasn't really playing like the way he plays on the record. So but I did get to see them. Like I said, John Bonham and John Paul Jones were great, but the other two.
Who's your favorite bass player you've ever played with?
Wow.
I don't want to burn any bridges here. But.
Oh, okay. I've played with a lot of great bass players. I can't really say who would be the best one, you know, because they're all different. You know.
Who was the easiest to work with? Let's put it that way.
There were so many. I mean, I can't really pick out any one bass player. I really can't because really there's so many. Let's see.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
You know, do you know who Marco Mendoza is? Sort of him?
Yeah.
He's been thin with, you know, he's like a Latin jazz player, but he's been he's out now with Neil Sean and who's a drummer that plays with Journey now.
I know who you're talking about.
But it's a trio, and Marco's like the lead. Mm-hmm. He's a lead vocalist, a bit bass player, but he was with Thin Lizzy. He's played with a lot of different. I played off and on with Marco for the last 20 years, and he's one of those guys that are very, very lyrical and very musical on bass, and his time is right on the money. He's one of the greats, you know. Percy Johnson, Brad X, Bob Elefante, Larry Antonino. There's lots of bass players that are just.
There's a plethora of great bass players out there.
Yeah.
And we've all heard the bass player joke, so we're not even going to get into that.
You know John Pena? Do you know who John Pena is?
Yeah.
Okay, John Pena. He's another one off and on since about 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's done really well for himself.
Yeah.
But that's on the bass player, and so many great bass players.
Yeah. One of our guests we've had on the program that you've worked with is Tony Kaye.
Oh, wow, okay.
Tony's outstanding. He's a real great friend of the program. And you've played with Tony, I guess, huh?
Well, we had a band called Circa.
Sure.
Which if you heard of Circa, but they've been around since maybe like 2006. I think the first record, Alan White, was on drums. And, of course, it was Tony and Billy Sherwood's group. And they did one, two, three. I think I'm on the third or the fourth record, called And So On.
Mm-hmm.
We were rehearsing for maybe I think 3 or 4 months before the recording or the tour or anything like that.
Sure.
But, I just got extremely busy and. We weren't able to put it out as a real band. It was a recording, and then they had to get another drummer. So, I do miss them, and I love the music that we played. You know, it was great.
Do you get itchy feet when you rehearse for 4 months? I mean, before you get a chance to perform it live or on video?
But you know, the music. See, the thing with me, I'm a session musician, so I had my hands on so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to focus on any one thing. So we only rehearsed like, you know, if I say 4 months, we only rehearsed maybe once or twice a week, if that.
Yeah.
But you know, of course, I wanted to get out there and do it. But you know, the music had to be rehearsed because there was a lot going on. It wasn't your typical rock or even your typical. Rock. It has a lot of, odd time signature things in the middle of this and things, moods change. And the music was very, very, very advanced. It's very, very cool stuff.
Wow.
And cheers to Billy Sherwood because he was the main writer.
All right. Our guest tonight, Ronnie Saiga. We're going to take a short break back and hear a little more music with Ronnie. You're listening to Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
this week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Cassie, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
This bobcat's heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
We're Rascal Flatts. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
We'll be back with Ronnie Saigo in just a few moments. We want to remind everyone that this part of Wild World is brought to you by McGregor's Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, right on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. If you've never had the opportunity to go west, you owe it to yourself. What a great place. What a great place to stay. You'll have wildlife in your backyard. It's absolutely extraordinary. And go to their website, McGregorMountainLodge.com. They have a webcam that goes 24 hours, 7 days a week. It's kind of dark right now to look at that on the Internet. But during the day, I'm telling you, folks, it's absolutely spectacular. If you've ever been to the Rockies, or if you haven't, it's an absolute spiritual experience, without a doubt. And that's McGregorMountainLodge.com. I want to remind everyone, go to our archives, listen to past shows. Our show tonight with Ronnie Saigo, drummer extraordinaire. But guests like Chris France, Tony Kaye, Dave Davies from the Kings, Al Jardine from the Beach Boys, it's all there. Something like 190 shows. We encourage you, absolutely free, to go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Larry-Batson. That's how you get it. Tonight's show will be in archives after the initial broadcast. We encourage you to check it out. Guest tonight, Ronnie Sayago with, well, he's with everybody here. And here's a little Brand X on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest tonight, Ronnie Siegel. Man, I love that cut, Ronnie. Tell us about it.
Thank you. Thank you for playing that, too. I have to do one correction.
Sure.
And you probably didn't know, but my last name actually is pronounced Siago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And Siago is kind of cool. But my real
well, that's my car.
At least it isn't. I've been called Ron Chiago. Chiago is like an Italian version of Chicago.
Okay.
But it's Thiago,
sorry.
You know. So, but that's it. I got
like,
you.
It's like Carmen Appice. How do you know he does?
All right. Yeah. You know what? Carmine used to study with him when I was a kid, when I was like 15 until I went over to Berkeley. But Carmine's a good friend of mine, and I used to call him Carmine Appice, but it's a piece, you know, it's always been that.
Well, we had Tim Bogert on the show, and I asked him
Tim
about
Bogert.
It. Yeah,
yeah.
And he said, nobody knows that.
Nobody knows that the right way. Yeah.
Well, they've screwed up my name so much. I've been called...
No. That's
Bat, though, or...
But it's Ronnie Siago. And let me tell you about this cut that you just played. It's on the Brand X record called X-Files.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a double CD, and it's like lots of drummers. It's like a compilation disc of all different musicians and bands that John Goodsall played with. And the drummers on it are like Phil Collins, Bill Bruford's on it, Mike Clark from Herbie Hancock's group, Mike Bassomano.
Mm-hmm.
But this track that I composed this track on my own.
Wow.
And I wrote it for it was a time signature of 7/4,
yeah.
And I wrote it for a dance troupe. And if you look online, you'll actually see. A piece called Tabla by Erin Landry. She photographed the whole dance troupe to dance to this music. Now, it's not the exact one that I do. The original one I wrote, and I played all the instruments. And then I played it for John. He said, let me do a little twist on it with the acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up with that acoustic guitar riff. But it's basically my song, it's on X-Files, it's the first song on the second CD,
mm-hmm.
And it's Thiago Goodsall, and it's Dance of Life, it's what it's called.
Wow. Well, it's extraordinary, I have to say. We may
drummer
be one
that
of...
writes, a drummer that writes music, wow, what is this?
You know, I find that the drummers are probably some of the most versatile musicians in any band. Because you have to look over the whole scheme. I mean, and let's face it.
Thank you for even saying that, because sometimes we don't get the respect of that. And you think of it. The drummer is basically the leader of the whole band, because he's the feel, he's the tempo, he's the groove, he's the dynamics. If you have a guy who's just, you know, playing one dynamic or one feel, then, you know, the band is going to sound like that, you know.
Sure. Well, my wife
used
to say she hates drummers that use too many cymbals. And we were talking to Kasim Sultan, who played with Utopia for years, and I asked him about that. He said, when I was in a band when I was a teenager, a garage band, I literally got in a fight with the drummer because I tried to throw away half of his cymbals because he just didn't like them. I mean,
cymbal tones, depending on how you use it, they can really wash out. You have to be careful of when you hit them, and it's not just, well, it's a cymbal up there, so just hit it. No, it's got to be a reason for why you hit it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Willie Wilcox was with Todd Rundgren, right?
Right.
Yeah.
He's really good.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed his playing, as well as what I've heard of yours tonight. It's just extraordinary. You're welcome. Mick Taylor, you played with Mick Taylor. We want to talk about him. Ex-Rolling Stone.
Yeah. Okay.
Tell us about Mick.
That was, you know, let me say this. A lot of the people that I've come across and played with,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't like I scoped out and go, wow, I want to play with him. I want to play with him. It just somehow happened. I moved to L.A.
Sure.
not knowing anybody, and it just started happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from one thing to the next one, from the first band that I played with, three of the guys, one guy was from Quiet Riot, the other two guys was in Bill Ward's band from Black Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
So then after playing with them, then I started meeting a lot of other people. So through the course, you know, I just ended up playing with this guy and that guy, from this guy knowing that guy, and then this one producer
sure.
that I knew, and the bass player did a record with Mick Taylor, and Mick Taylor was getting ready to do a concert. Would you like to play with Mick Taylor in concert? Yes, I would.
Wow.
And it was a concert in L.A., and we rehearsed one day. He said, you know, learn these songs, a couple of these Stone songs, but we kind of did it as an instrumental, like Can't You Hear Me Knocking and a few
mm-hmm.
other things. If you heard that record, you know, Can't You Hear Me Knocking, it was like a 11, 12-minute instrumental
mm-hmm.
with drum solos and all kinds of stuff going on. But so we kind of did that. It was a lot of improv, basic learning the form of the tune, and then just go from there. And that's what it went on the first. It ended up to be a live record. It's called Coasting Home. So it ended up to be a concert that was supposed to be just a concert. Then that concert ended up to be a live album. Then that live album ended up to be a short tour. And it ended up like that. And it, you know, it was a trip time with me because. You know, he's Mick Taylor. You know, he was Jagger's favorite guitar player. He was with the Stones for, I think, 4 or 5 years, and he ended up just
mm-hmm.
quitting because he didn't want to do that no more. He wanted to play blues.
Wow.
And, you know, he didn't have much of anything. You know, he had to go to where his heart was and to play blues. You know?
Well, that's important. I mean... There's nothing sadder than a musician playing material that he doesn't want to play, that his heart's not into it. He doesn't have the passion. I mean,
I don't know. I don't think he, at the time, if he stayed with them, he would probably understand where they were at. But even though he probably didn't, he was so young when he went with them. I think, God, if he was even 20, I think that's all.
Oh, my.
He was like 20 years old, and he's playing with the Rolling Stones, the biggest rock group on the planet, right?
Sure.
So, and he was with John Mayall before that, and then I think Brian Jones died, and then Mick Jagger asked John Mayall, do you know any guitar players? And he's the one who recommended Mick.
And what an excellent choice. Man, what an excellent choice. Of course, to play with Keith Richards is... I mean, he's the king of riffs. I mean, if you just want to talk about somebody that's besides that, but yeah, that's extra. And we enjoyed Mick. He was such. But you're right. He's so young, and that has to be a tornado to be touring with the Stones. I mean,
yeah. I don't think he got. He really got the respect that he thought he should have got because
mm-hmm.
he was part of the band, and I guess he was. Part writer, and I'm not even sure if he got writing credits. I think he kind of co-wrote the pieces, and then it ended up to be, you know, Jagger and Richards who wrote everything. So I think that kind of turned him off there. I'm not really sure. I don't want to say anything false, but I think that was kind of what happened. And you know, when we played live, people would come up and have Mick sign the Stones records that he played on. You know.
I'll bet.
And I'm thinking, oh, God, he did play in that record. Whoa. You know, Let It Bleed, I came out, I was like 10 years old. You know, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have the cassette, and I used to listen to it all the time. And I'm playing with the guy.
Yeah, that has to be almost, I don't think I've explained it. I do wildlife programs. I work with wild animals, and we do programs all over the country. And I think... You working with Mick Taylor would be like the first time we worked with him, and you probably, I don't know how old you are, but Jim Fowler from Wild.
Oh, yeah, right.
when we first worked for him. It was almost surreal. I mean, this is a guy we watched every Tuesday night on TV dangling from cliffs catching California condors.
Yeah.
Whereas you're playing with someone that you remember looking at the albums when we had albums, which was a great era.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, working with the best of the best, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
And then somehow, you know, somehow that's just poured into my life within all these years. It just, it happened like that, you know.
Well, I think a lot, the music business is such that it's who you know. I can remember, do you know Dennis Dragon?
No, that doesn't sound familiar.
Well, he's a drummer. His brother was, Daryl Dragon was with Captain and Tennille, but Dennis was a drummer. A pretty good drummer. And he gets a call one day from Frank Zappa.
Oh, man.
And Frank said, I hear you're a pretty good drummer. He says, well, you know, yeah, I can hold my own. And then Frank asked him, he says, do you read? Do you read music? And Dennis goes, no, and the phone went click.
Oh, yeah. No, that's Frank's gig is number one. Better be able to read, and excuse my French, but flush it, you know, be able to read anything.
Yeah.
And then, and play, you know, all this different styles, jazz,
mm-hmm.
rock, fusion, and all this Latin. You got to have all that stuff together.
It has to be a good time for the musicians that can do it.
Yeah, right. He's only had a few of the greatest drummers in the world in that band. And
oh, my
all,
Lord. Yeah. Well, they'd have to be to play some of that stuff. I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
And you've toured with Ricky Lee Jones, and we love Ricky Lee Jones.
I've never toured with Ricky. This is what happened with that. Yeah, I recorded on Ghosty Head, but... And again, it just fell into my lap, like things happen. I'm in Conway Records, which is a real famous recording studio in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I'm recording with Bill Ward from Black Sabbath, and we're doing his record. And then, you know, everybody's coming in, Lyle Leverett, Chicago, this
wow.
guy, that guy. Ricky was, you know, because at Conway there's an A, B, and I think a C studio. So Ricky
mm-hmm.
was like in studio B or something like that. And one of the engineers was saying, I want to get you on a track for Ricky's new record. I said, wow, great! I'd love to do that. I'm a big fan of Ricky Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just came like that. It just show up with no rehearsal. Not they would just play the track and they go, okay, what do you think? What do you hear? What would you play to this? It's like that simple. And I go, okay, I'm hearing this. And it was that record she was doing was kind of like a hip-hop record.
Mm-hmm.
Almost before even hip-hop was around. But it was that kind of feel. So I said, okay, this is what I'm hearing. I'm going to play to that. And I said, just go. Just play. They turn it on record. I'm playing to the click. And then they just did what they did with the track. And
mm-hmm.
it ended up on Ghosty Head, a song called Howard.
Wow.
And, you know, I left it open. I said, I'd love to, you know, tour with Ricky and play more with her.
Sure.
But, you know, and, you know, things happen. And other producers come in. They get their guys, you know, like that. So, you know, and I continue doing what I do. But, you know, I still kind of regret that I didn't tour with her. Although, you know, it's not like that might never happen because she's still out there doing some really cool stuff.
Sure.
The recordings that I thought were great recordings. But that was an experience.
I'll bet. And you worked with the great producer Jack Douglas.
Who's that?
You worked with Jack Douglas.
I worked with Jack Douglas. Wow. Yeah, I did. That was another one. Tell him about that.
Oh, my.
The bass player that I played with, Paul Hill, which was one of, let me talk about bass players. Paul Hill is another one of my favorite bass players. He's played with so many different people. You used to look him up.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I played with Bill Ward with Paul Hill, and I also played with Mick Taylor with Paul Hill. And then he was friends with Jack because Paul actually played on one of the Aerosmith records. And Paul said that Jack was looking for a drummer to do this speed metal record, which I forget the name of the actor, real famous actor's son. And I forgot his name. But his son was doing this speed metal record. My double bass drum chops are pretty hot. So I went in there, and this is before I knew the real speed of speed metal, right?
Yeah.
So I went in there and go, well, I can play about this speed on the double bass drum, but the other, what they were doing, okay, we're going to record this, but you're going to have to, like, kind of make it sound faster than it is, you know? and that kind of, you know, put a thing in my head where I'm going, wow, I didn't even know this kind of music existed. Then I went in there full force and learned how to play that fast on the double bass drums.
Yeah.
And it took me like 4 years of constant learning the right technique with that speed on the kick drums. Now I could do it like it's like since I wake up out of bed, I could play like that. But back when I was with Paul,
yeah,
it was like, I could get through the session. But we had a fun time, and everything went really, really well. So.
Well, that has to sound explosive live.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know what happened to the artist, and of course they went on to do other things, but being around Jack,
Yeah.
It was a trip, and he's such a gracious, nice guy, funny. I mean, all the things you would think he probably wouldn't be. He's done so many things with so many great famous artists.
You just
want to make sure you're having fun in there and playing the best you can play.
Do you ever pinch yourself and say, "Hey, man, I got a pretty damn cool job"?
How did that happen?
Because it is a job.
I'm doing a session, and forgive me for saying this, but I can't even think of his name now. But he produced all the Hendrix records. Producer, give me a name. Come on.
Oh, Eddie Kramer.
Eddie Kramer comes in.
Yeah.
Eddie, I'm sorry, Eddie. Eddie came in because Jack and Eddie worked at the Trident Studios for years, and they're best of friends. So Eddie comes in to the session, and we're rapping for 2 hours with Eddie Kramer.
Oh, my.
So, we talk about, we're talking about Hendrix, and it was asking about the drugs, and he told me that that was a fluke that happened. I mean, Jimmy was a studious, very hard worker. And he wasn't like some junkie guy, drug addict, that just show up. The guy was a hard worker. He was in the studio. He was like a workaholic,
Well, he was a man
of
many
takes. That was good to hear that. Yeah.
That's basically Noel Redding. That was the final straw. I think they did so many takes of All Along the Watchtower that Noel Redding just got fed up, and Jimmy ended up doing the bass part for that song. And it is an extraordinary bass part.
Yeah.
In fact, when Tim Boger was on the show, we Vanilla Fudge toured with Hendrix, and he had trouble getting Noel Redding to come in and do sound checks. So Tim said, "I'll do the sound check. I have no problem whatsoever."
Oh, man. So did Tim play with Hendrix?
Yeah, he did the sound checks.
Is that cool or what?
I'm telling you, because, my gosh, people don't realize being a musician is hard work, and to be as successful like you have and some of these other artists we've had on, it is a demanding job. It is.
And number one, you have to get rid of that ego. Let that go, and just play, enjoy, don't think, well, back then, Noel Redding, it was Jimi Hendrix experience, but you know what? It takes a lot of work to get to that point, and just be humble and to be thankful every day that you've been,
Well, just between me and you, I didn't think he was that great a bass player anyway.
No, he wasn't. Matter of fact, you know Chris Squire, bass player from Yes.
Oh yes.
He was in a band, and there's a thing on the internet. It's so funny. He's talking about I forget the name of the band. It was a prog rock band. I think it was Peter Banks was in it too. But they they were playing at the you know the famous Marquee in London.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we were gonna play with this famous band that was in London. And all of a sudden, this other group comes in with this black guy, and you know. Nobody heard of him, and they're playing the song, and then the bass player was kept on making mistakes, and they go, "Oh, it's freaking A, B, and G. What is the problem here?" You know, Chris Squire's going, "Oh, we're going to make no money. Nobody's going to come. These guys suck." And it ended up to be Jimi Hendrix Experience, and he's sitting there having a cup of tea, and in the restaurant, he's seeing the lines down the street. He says, "Well, I think I'll get a piece of cake. Now, I'll make a little more money tonight." And it was Andrews, but he was talking about it already, going, "Well, this guy couldn't hardly play."
No, he was. Well, I always thought if Jimmy would have had a better rhythm section, drummer and bass player, that the music would have gone. Well, you know who he was getting ready to play with before his passing was Miles Davis.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was going to go in the studio with Miles Davis, and they were going to, and that would have been, oh my lord.
Well, that was probably around the Bitches Brew time where Miles was really getting into that fusion, the progressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah. Well, I saw Jimmy live once, and it was, well, in those days they didn't play very long, 45 minutes, and that was it. And Noel Redding wasn't very good. And Jimi Hendrix, I mean, gosh, what an extraordinary. Ronnie, gosh, it's been wonderful to have you on the show tonight. Gosh, I hope you've enjoyed yourself and
I really
had a good
did.
Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's simply my pleasure. We need to do this again. What new projects you got coming up? We need to plug that.
One project that I'd really like to promote is I'm doing online drum lessons, and it's a very new kind of situation where people can just install Skype into a computer, and as long as they have webcam and Skype, they can have personal drum lessons with me, and they could go to either find out about it on RonnieFiago.com or Facebook. Ronnie Fiago, or my new Facebook page will be Online Drum Lessons with Ronnie Fiago.
What a fantastic idea. I can't imagine a youngster that could not have a better instructor. I mean, my Lord. You've done some extraordinary work. Extraordinary.
Thank you. And now it's time for me to share. And with this new internet situation, I could give drum lessons, group lessons, private lessons to anybody in the world.
Oh, my Lord. Well, and you know, they're trying to bring music into the schools more because, you know, it's getting dumped. You know, a lot of schools, the budgets just can't handle it, and I think it's sad, especially for the youngsters that have the will and the ability to be musicians and to have the opportunity to get lessons from you. My God, that's just extraordinary.
Well, that's my situation. I want to help. And, of course, there's a lot of new things that are coming up. There's one exciting thing that I just heard about today. I'm actually not allowed to talk about it, but it'll be known within the next couple of months. I'm excited about that, too. But, you know.
Well, you'll have to come back on the show.
I would love to. There's so much more to talk about, but I really appreciate you having me on the show, and I hope to see you, do some more with you. Whatever I can do to help.
Well, you're a friend of our show now, so keep in mind we'll be bugging you every once in a while to have you visit with us because it was absolutely amazing. I want to, before I take off and Ronnie takes off, I want to thank Western Boone Junior and Senior High School in Thorntown, Indiana. Now, this is something I'd had to do. It was pretty cool. I gave the commencement address last Saturday for their graduating class, and I'll tell you what, you talk about an audience. about 2,000 people, yes.
Wow.
But it was amazing. I had such a great time, and they were so cordial, and I got so many nice comments after it, and I forgot to mention at the start of the program, and I was going to do that, and we want to say hats off to them. Gosh, it was absolutely spectacular.
Wow, beautiful. Excellent.
Ronnie Ciago.
Ciago, that's it.
I got it now. Great to have you on the show. Next week we've got a dandy. My wife's going to join us, my better half, the animal handler extraordinaire. She's going to tell all the secrets about me and my adventures with wild animals. Should be great.
Yeah.
And as always, you can listen to tonight's show on through our archive. Just go to Larry Batson, Wild World, and you'll see it there, and you can hear our interview tonight and our program with a fantastic drummer, musician, Ronnie Ciago. It was great. Have a great week, everybody. You've been listening to Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.